What's up, and welcome everybody to the Bros and Consoles podcast mini-series Ready and Waiting, a place where we review the games we love and tell you why we love them. I am one half of your host, Nathan Choquette, and I'm back for a midweek episode ahead of the launch of a game that I played recently and platinumed as well. Thank you very much. And it was a couple days ago that I actually finished that up. And the game itself, for people who are, you know, didn't read the title of this Ready and Waiting episode, is called Journey of the Broken Circle. It's a very, very cool game that I got to play. It has been developed by Lovable Hat Cult, based in Copenhagen, Denmark. Finally got the name down there. I think I mentioned it briefly on the previous episode of the solo gaming updates episodes, and you know, I don't know what happened there. I was stumbling over it so hard, and finally I feel like I've gotten it down again. Probably my eyes were just super tired that day, and you know, no excuses. Copenhagen I should be able to say pretty easily, and now it just kind of rolls off the tongue, which is nice. The game is also published by Nakana.io. They have won multiple awards and nominations in the year of 2020, including things like a first runner-up on the label from Indie Showdown Contest 2020. They were a selection in the 8 International Conference on Interactive Digital Storytelling. They also won the Best Narrative Game for the Indiecade 2020, as well as the winner of the Best Story Award for the Game Connection Europe 2020. So a lot of really cool things that they've seen over there for this game. I believe it released on PC last year and is actually coming up for its release in a few days now. March 12th, I believe, is coming to PS4, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One. I believe the price on all of those is $7.99 or $8, I think, is on the Switch there. So difference of about a cent. Switch does things in weird ways sometimes, but you know, we love the Switch as well. But very, very cool game overall. In terms of kind of, you know, the game itself, just giving you a brief overview here, it is a game where you play, if I were to give you like a pitch for the game, right? So you play as a character called Circle, and yes, that is a proper noun there. You're essentially a missing, you're essentially a circle that's missing a kind of pie slice piece of yourself, and your character wants kind of desperately to fill that spot just to become a, you know, completely round circle. As you're kind of playing through the levels, though, you meet various other shapes in the world which can kind of meld with you and give you actually extra abilities to overcome different platforming challenges. And that's kind of one of the main things of this game, is it is a platforming game with kind of a focus as well on story. And I really think that's kind of one of the main things that drew me into the game, is it reminded me a little bit of another indie title from, I think at this point, several years ago, called Thomas Was Alone, which was also a kind of platform puzzle type of game that, you know, relied on different shapes of different sizes in order to kind of move you through this background story and kind of really get you engaged there. But before I go on any further there and kind of give you more thoughts on this game, just as a full disclosure, you guys kind of already know me from just kind of going through other episodes on the podcast and whatnot. You know that I choose the games that I play usually pretty carefully. Sometimes I'll, you know, see things on the store that look exciting based off of trailers and things like that and want to jump into it. And then, you know, come to find out later on, it's not as, you know, great as I was hoping for. But you guys are aware that, you know, when I feel a certain way about a game, I let you know about it. I try not to kind of like hide things or basically kind of give you like false impressions and whatnot. So hope that you kind of know where I'm coming from with all these things. But as a full disclosure, just want to let everybody know that I did get a code for review for this game from the publisher, and played it over on the PS4, which is kind of the version I was playing of the game. So if different versions, you know, have different things that pop up eventually, maybe like issues or bugs that kind of pop up every so often, that does happen for indie games on other platforms besides the PS4, just know that this was the kind of experience that I had there, and that's kind of maybe why things were different for me. But kind of just going into the game itself, just kind of a like top level kind of analysis there. So just letting you know that it's got about like 16 levels, so the game is actually pretty decently quick. You can beat it in the course of a few hours, not something that you need to spend like dozens and dozens of hours in. which I think is nice. I do prefer occasionally to kind of jump into smaller experiences to be able to kind of really dive into something all in one sitting. I think for these types of games, that is kind of the best experience you can do, is just kind of dive in and do the entire thing at once rather than kind of coming back to it over the course of time. And feel like you just kind of get a more complete picture that way, and makes things a little bit smoother and kind of delivers things a little bit better story-wise. But along with that, you also get a couple bonus levels that you can unlock by finding magic mushrooms that are hidden in the game. And yes, I did say magic mushrooms. It's kind of a funny thing that I liked in there, was that basically as you're kind of going throughout the different levels, you'll occasionally, I believe in the early game, you find, you know, the mushroom pretty out in the open. And anytime you get near one of these things, there is kind of this funky, like rave-like music kind of going on, kind of like party sound and music. And basically, as you get closer to it, even if you can't see it, you know it's in the vicinity because you can hear the music going on somewhere. And I'm not sure if it is, because it's tough to tell for different like projects and stuff. I'm not sure if it was an intentional thing, but I feel like with my, because I played with headphones on and everything, I feel like I could kind of hear a little bit as far as like 3D audio kind of went. Now, whether or not that is something that, you know, is in there on purpose, or if it was just something that maybe, you know, headphones nowadays can do, even if it's not kind of in, I guess, put into the code on purpose and whatnot there, it was kind of a nice thing to know that, you know, I can hear maybe a little bit more on my right side than on my left side, so I know that the, you know, mushroom is hidden somewhere to my right, basically, on the level. And I thought that was kind of a nice touch in there. Going back just a little bit, though, the bonus levels, I think, were one of the cool things as well in the game that I'll kind of mention just a little bit here, because it's not, you know, it's not the main thing, since you only find them with the mushrooms, but basically, if you get to unlock enough mushrooms through finding them in the levels, you can unlock the first one, which I believe is called a Bad Trip, and it's basically a homage to the 2002 game called Sexy Hiking, and in that game, essentially, you know, you're climbing. I think there's another game that was made more recently, maybe like a few years ago or so, but basically, you're kind of climbing using like a hammer in some of those games and stuff. In this one, your, you know, character Circle grows a long mushroom, basically, and then you use the mushroom to kind of, you know, constantly like roll yourself along these different obstacles in the level and kind of climb this mountain and everything. That was a super interesting experience. It's definitely kind of like the title says, a bad trip, where if you're kind of listening to the music and stuff, it's very kind of like techno rave kind of sounding music. And overall, it's a challenge to kind of get all the way up this mountain. There was a few times, I think about halfway up, where I got to a point that I kept falling from. And funny enough, the game told me like, oh man, like you're halfway there. You almost got it. Maybe try this next time kind of thing. And it was kind of letting me know like, hey, like you just keep missing it. Just keep on going type of thing. And it was this kind of, you know, funny antics that the game does with the dialogue and everything that kind of made me enjoy the original game as well, but just kind of added a little bit extra to this bonus level. And the second one was a pretty cool thing. I think that one's called Good Trip, actually. And basically there you are kind of combining with the different partners you found throughout the main game, and then being able to use all of their different abilities to kind of get you around this singular level to find all these different stars as well that are kind of hidden and collectibles and whatnot. So pretty cool bonus levels, but if you want to try those out, those are a couple things that are going to be needed for the Platinum Trophy. So that, along with just collecting all the mushrooms, for you guys know that I am a trophy hunter at heart. So this was kind of one of those things that I did wanted to get under my belt and everything to kind of get out of the way so that I could basically kind of enjoy the entire experience. I think, I'm trying to remember when I played the bonus levels, but I think I, partway through, after I had unlocked both, I decided to jump over in them to try them out, and I managed to finish those up before I finished the game proper. So in case you're curious about kind of the timeline I went through there, it's pretty easy to just kind of jump out, select those levels, and then jump back into whatever level you wanted to play. The level select is a pretty kind of simple thing to navigate, and it's actually kind of aesthetically nice too, because you get to see, you know, your character Circle, and the missing pie slice ends up looking like the level that you're actually going to choose and stuff, which I thought was a cool aesthetic choice. But kind of moving further into the actual game itself, I think one of the main things in any kind of game in general, as well as, you know, especially platforming games, is the gameplay itself, which I can report is very nice and tight in this one. I don't think it's hard to kind of get as, you know, specific and precise as things like, you know, things like Mario that I think a lot of people would use as kind of a platforming gold star comparison type of thing. But in terms of kind of like 2D platforming kind of thing, I never felt like it was, you know, overly difficult to get to where I was trying to go. I did feel like, you know, I did have to kind of jump at the last moment for specific areas in different levels. And I think that's kind of what you want from a platforming type of game anyways. You want that, you know, preciseness in each kind of move that you're making, and you want it to kind of matter in terms of kind of going through places. Otherwise, you know, if the, you know, areas that you maybe have to like jump over are just too tiny and you're never going to miss type of thing, it kind of takes some of the, I guess, magic out of playing a platforming game, because, you know, without the challenge there to an extent, you're really just kind of moving along and kind of reading text on a screen, and that's not really a platforming game anymore. So you know, happy with the overall gameplay mechanics there. Some other nice things, though, was the actual different abilities that I mentioned that you get from partners that you meet throughout the world. You have a total of 3 different partners that you come across, and each one has their own different ability. Basically, one of them lets you kind of stick to walls to be able to climb things you wouldn't be able to climb normally. Another one lets you kind of float and glide, and that one kind of gets you higher up into different areas that you probably wouldn't be able to reach by yourself. And then the last one gives you really nice speed boost to kind of go through areas and make longer jumps and things like that. All those things, you know, play surprisingly well. There wasn't really any areas that I felt like, you know, these things kind of hindered the experience. They were all just kind of helping things overall, which was nice. And, you know, it kind of added in, you know, a little bit of, I guess, like a little bit of kind of spiciness to break up some of the things that I think sometimes slow down platforming games in terms of just things feeling very similar. I feel like it was spaced out enough that, you know, I got the hang of kind of what I was doing. And by the time I got the hang of it, it was time to move on to something else. And I think that kind of pacing is pretty important for these types of games. Another thing, though, that I was interested at seeing was that at specific times, there would be areas where kind of control is taken away from you as a player. And I thought that was actually a really interesting choice, because it does go along very strongly with the narrative that's going on in the background. And, you know, if you wanted to just kind of, you know, rush through the game and stuff, that's totally fine for people that want to do that. If you are only there for the platforming, don't really want to know what's going on with this circle in her life and all these different shapes and whatnot, that's okay. But for the people that, you know, are, you know, paying attention to all that and reading as you're going along, it's really cool to see that these kind of moments happen where control is taken away from you because of what's going on in the story in the background. I don't want to get into kind of like spoiler kind of things there. But just kind of as an example of kind of what ends up happening is, for one of the characters, you end up getting, so I'll say like the one that lets you basically kind of stick to walls and stuff. He doesn't feel, he or she, I guess there's no genders for shapes. His name is Sticky, so I'll call him that. I keep saying him. It's so difficult to get away from pronouns and stuff. But Sticky basically doesn't want to move on further from where you're at. And so he starts to like forcibly stick to walls and any surface that he touches. And it gets in the way of you, you know, continuing at the speed that you want to go. And this is, you know, both part of the narrative and also a cool kind of moment where control is being taken away from you and basically showing you that, like, hey, I have to now like force our, like, you know, our combination pair to continue on through here, and it's not letting me do it on my own like I want to. And I think it's a pretty like powerful type of thing, especially in a game type that, you know, platformers are all about your own control and your own preciseness, for this type of thing to start kind of, you know, hampering you and getting in your way. So it's a pretty bold choice, and I think it paid off really well. Other examples there that I thought were pretty cool was the balloon partner that you meet up with. Basically, partway through, like, kind of your journey and everything, the balloon doesn't want to continue on anymore either and starts to, you know, deflate and everything. And then you have to force the balloon to stay inflated in order to continue. And on the, you know, the one hand, like I mentioned with the previous example, it's a cool mechanic of, you know, control being taken away from you, but also the ability to then kind of change when your balloon was inflated to allow you to kind of move more precisely through the level. I thought was a really cool thing. It's kind of almost somewhat opposite of the previous example where, you know, the one where you're getting stuck to the walls all the time and you're not wanting to do that and you have to keep pressing a button to unstick yourself is now opposite, where, you know, this actually plays the you know, deflating and inflating kind of plays into the actual level and gives you a little bit more control to an extent, but it also makes you kind of work harder, and that's kind of playing into the entire theme going on in the background really well. Well, since I've already done two out of the three, I might as well just kind of give you the third example. There was basically the last one, which the name is Perfect, and basically when, you know, you're paired up with Perfect, you are going pretty quickly. Like I mentioned, speed is all your thing and whatnot. The way that they kind of, you know, do that same type of, you know, control stealing mechanic is that when you're trying to go forward, Perfect is now kind of forcing you to continuously go right? So you can't kind of slow yourself down or go the opposite way. They only want you to go in one direction. And so it's kind of an interesting thing where now you're kind of fighting against the extra speed there in places that you maybe don't want it, and have to kind of use that to kind of control your timing and make things more precise. But overall, all the kind of gameplay itself feeding into the story, I think, was a really, really nice thing to see. And I think that is kind of one of the things that in their, I'm not sure if it was the kind of press kit or the actual just kind of like things on the website, but it is something that they're kind of trying to aim to do, is kind of merge the gameplay and the story. And I think that, you know, worked out really well. Since we're just kind of talking about like the story a little bit there, it's a, you know, just kind of a overview thing, because I don't want to get into like spoiler kind of things there. I want people to be able to experience it for themselves. But you are kind of going with this, you know, broken circle on a journey, and kind of seeing the circle change over time because of the different companions that you face, or not face, meet up with, I should say, and then kind of merge with to gain different abilities and whatnot, was a really cool thing. I wasn't expecting actually the story to kind of be more, you know, because on the outset, right, when they talk about, you know, wanting the game kind of to be relatable to people and stuff, I was like, okay, yeah, I get it, you know, story in the background, sure, that will be relatable somehow. But it kind of like hit me in a certain way where it ended up being relatable in kind of an aspect that I wasn't expecting. And that, I think, is where I'll kind of like leave things off, because, you know, it was ended up being a kind of really nice thing that kind of drew me further into the story because of kind of how relatable it was. Not to say that I've been in those exact type of situations, but kind of seeing the situations that were being pushed onto Circle by, you know, these different shapes that she's merging with and whatnot, I could kind of see the, you know, the human element in there, and it kind of made them feel like, you know, more than just, you know, shapes on a screen going from left to right type of thing. And I think it was a really strong story actually overall. In my mind, actually a little bit stronger than what I remember from Thomas Was Alone as far as storytelling is going. So very cool thing to see there. It's always nice that, you know, I think obviously if you, like I mentioned earlier on, since they've won awards in kind of areas of storytelling and whatnot, it makes sense that it's a pretty strong story. But still, it was nice to see that these things kind of like line up, and I'm kind of falling in on the side where, yeah, I do agree that this is a pretty strong thing that they've got going on. Aesthetic-wise, I really did enjoy the colors of everything. I think the color scheme that they went with was really nice. They kind of use more like pastel rather than like super bright and bold in your face colors. And kind of the way that the colors changed throughout the levels was, I think, handled really nicely. Basically, it's kind of like, you know, as you're going through, sometimes you're in really like bright, vibrant areas. Kind of they seem like they're way more full of life and everything. Sometimes you're in areas that look kind of more like cold and like dark, and you kind of feel that because of the story as well. I think they did a good job of kind of pairing those things together. And then along with just the overall, you know, color scheme aesthetics, there was also kind of the sound and music that I thought the music, you know, for games that are all about text and there's no like reading or anything like that happening with voices, it is important to kind of have a strong music background in there. And while it's not as strong as maybe games I've played in the past, like things like Fury, which is, you know, totally different type of game, but things like that, or like even The Messenger and things there. Basically, the, you know, the kind of music they had going on in the background did seem like it fit pretty well with kind of like every area that you're at in the game. And I think that's kind of one of the most important parts, is that, you know, when you're on this, you know, exciting journey going through and whatnot, and got these, you know, higher highs in the story, you do need kind of a soundtrack that kind of matches with that, and then, you know, correspondingly matches with the lows as well in the story. Along with just kind of those things, though, the overall kind of ambiance and like the feel or the vibe of the game, very kind of, you know, up and down, and I think that's kind of on purpose. Like I mentioned, alluding to the overall like story in the background there, there are going to be ups and downs as far as kind of like how people, I think, will feel about the game. You know, everybody kind of feels things a little bit differently, but personally, I went through kind of some ups and downs in there, and kind of because it matches with the story, I think it did a good job at kind of making me, you know, feel these things that were kind of going on there, even though, like I said, just shapes on the screen and whatnot. And then I think the last part that I'll just kind of mention there, as far as kind of things I really enjoyed, was the kind of characterizations of the partners. I thought it was a pretty nice touch that they basically had, you know, these, you know, kind of seemingly random shapes that kind of fit into Circle. And the way that they kind of implement the, you know, the shape itself, along with, you know, the name of whatever you're attaching yourself to, not like they have, you know, crazy names or anything like that, but one of them is essentially supposed to be a stick, and it allows you to stick to walls, right? The other one's a balloon, it allows you to float, and then the other one is perfect, and then you'll kind of see that one as it comes. But basically, as you're kind of going through everything, I thought that it was a nice touch that these things kind of all matched up on that kind of base level, and then also kind of in a deeper level and the character, or I guess the characters themselves, where, you know, Sticky is kind of a stick in the mud, honestly. Like, he kind of doesn't really, or sorry, it doesn't kind of really want to, like, go and do things. It kind of just wants to hang out and, you know, just be a stick, be chill. And then, you know, Circle's all about, like, let's keep on going, let's go see new things, let's just explore the world and stuff. And Stick is just like, nah, I just want to stay here. I don't really want to, like, move. I want to spread some roots, which, you know, it's a stick. It's kind of like a pine cone in a way. And it wants to just hang out and just, you know, be still and just explore, or not really explore, opposite of that. It wants to just hang out and stay where it's at and kind of enjoy the views and whatnot that it has. And then Balloon, you know, being able to kind of like float and all that, it wants to be like very like free and kind of away and individual and all that. And all these things, you know, played very nicely together. It's a good synergy kind of going on. And I think that's a maybe smaller thing that maybe people that are kind of speeding through may miss a little bit, but it's a pretty cool aspect if you just kind of slow down and think about it, which I think is the same thing for a lot of things in this game, is just kind of slowing down and thinking about some of the small things that are going on, which is, you know, pretty nice. And I know I said that would be the last one, but just a few other nice touches that I liked in there. Number one, because I am a trophy guy at heart, you guys know that I enjoy looking through trophy lists and kind of seeing what they got to offer. This one, pretty sweet trophy list. I think it's about 11 golds and a platinum there. So hats off to you guys, Lovable Hat Cult. But along with that, just kind of the actual like trophies themselves. They're never annoying things. There can be some annoying trophies in different games, like, you know, sometimes games focus way too heavily on collectibles and whatnot. I liked that there was only really the one, or actually I guess I should say two collectible type of trophies, one for one of the bonus levels and then the other for just kind of collecting all the mushrooms overall. Along with the trophy list, though, I like that there are some kind of secrets in the game, especially in the very beginning. It's a, you know, I think it's a kind of a gameplay type of thing. Maybe people that play a lot of games kind of will see this more often than people who are just kind of like brand new to video games. But I think framing wise, you know, it starts you off on the left side. As you know, it's a 2D platformer, so you're going to be going from left to right, right? It's just kind of, it's something that's just kind of ingrained in people when you see that kind of framing. And I thought it was a really cool thing that if you kind of go to the left at the very beginning on the first level instead of going to the right, there is a little bit of extra dialogue there that kind of, you know, signifies that the game knows that you're going the wrong way and is kind of pointing you like, hey, you actually got to go the other way, but this is a little bit of funny dialogue for you that found this secret over here. And I appreciate secrets like that. Those are pretty cool times when that happens. And then one other thing that I really liked was it was a It's something that I think the Messenger was the first one that I, first game that I've kind of really noticed this happen in. It happened again in this game as well. Maybe not quite to the, I guess, same extent, but just kind of knowing that it did happen, I thought was cool. And that's basically the sound muffling of the music when you go underwater within this game. I always think that's kind of a nice touch because, you know, just it's like when you're looking at a game and it's all just like, you know, sights and sounds and things, it does make a difference when you have these little tiny quality of life changes and things there. So I thought that was a cool thing. So hats off to you guys at the sound team over there. I thought that was a very nice thing. In the other side, kind of the areas that I could say would be a little bit, you know, maybe kind of bring the game down just very slightly there, kind of because of the occasional like obtuseness of some of these things. The first one that I had a little bit of an issue with was the actual like contrast on the collectibles in the level select screen. Now, this may seem kind of like a small thing, but, you know, just kind of hear me out here, where looking at kind of the, you know, level select screen, you have the title of the level that you can choose, and then below that, right above kind of the color pie slice that kind of shows part of the level, it has the number of mushrooms that are in the level for you to collect, right? And so on the one hand, that's a great thing. I enjoy seeing some kind of counter to let me know like when I do have to actually get these collectibles and which ones I'm missing. But the actual contrast between, you know, having a mushroom and not having it is actually kind of difficult to see. It's a pretty light contrast difference where basically I think when it's, you know, darker grayed out, it is one that you don't have. And then when it's just kind of very slightly more white, it is one that you've already picked up. And kind of when you go between the different levels themselves, it's kind of hard to see after a while which ones you have and which ones you don't, unless you've picked up, say, like one mushroom on a level and missed like the other one or the other two. And being able to see them side by side there, you can see it a little bit better. But as you're kind of going forward or going backwards, it gets kind of tough to see like the actual contrast difference. And, you know, for people that know me and my you know, eyeball medical like background and whatnot, they know that, like, you know, this kind of stuff I can really give you a little bit more finer detail on, but contrast there a little bit tough to pick up on. I'm not sure if it's just a TV thing or if it's an actual thing, so hopefully people will kind of be able to see that. And I don't know, I think it would maybe be a little bit easier if there was just kind of an actual like color difference, maybe if it was just kind of like, you know, black versus white, or if it was kind of like grayed out and maybe it's an actual color that pops up there when you grab it. But just kind of a small thing there. Another one that I, you know, thought was a kind of weird obtuse type of thing was in level 7, I believe it's called a dark place. Basically there is a collectible there kind of towards the beginning of that level that, you know, is, you know, it plays a dual role where it's kind of showing you like, hey, like you don't have this partner with you anymore, so you can't reach this actual collectible. And it's kind of giving you a little bit of a story context background there. But then also it's, you know, it's a collectible. And in my mind, because there's the trophy for getting all the mushrooms, I'm like, okay, there has to be some way to get this thing. Maybe I'll find it later. And so I kind of passed by and, you know, finished the level eventually and didn't get it. And I kind of went through, I think, a few more levels, did some bonus levels, and then tried to go back. And then I was like, okay, well, I can't get this one for some reason. And I'm also missing one other mushroom in this level. So I do need to now kind of go further along to see if I can find the ones or find the way to get to those things. And I think actually by that time when I went back to try and get the two that I had missed, I picked up one of them. And then the trophy popped for me. So that was kind of a weird thing there where in the level select, right? Like you can see that you didn't get one of these things and it's specifically that one that I mentioned. But apparently you actually don't need all of the collectibles in order to get the trophy. So it's basically everything except for that one at the beginning of level 7. So for people that are kind of looking into the future and maybe like hearing this and kind of looking for like the exact number that you need there, I think you need 38 exactly, and there's one on level 7 that you can't get in the very beginning. So that was a little bit obtuse, not anything that is, you know, a huge problem or whatnot there. And then lastly, actually, was the last level of the game, where part of the level you're in kind of like a chase scene. Won't kind of go into the whole like chase idea, because you'll get to know it as you play and whatnot. But when you're being chased in this area, there's an area where you can kind of make a almost like a figure eight type of path and whatnot to kind of avoid being caught on this chase. And as you're going through there, each time that you kind of meet back in the middle, there is a kind of rough looking rock bridge ground area. And each time that you kind of jump on it and whatnot, there is kind of a shake, I think a little bit of a rumble on the controller and a little bit of a shake kind of in the sound of the game and whatnot. And so each time I did that, I got a new piece of dialogue. And was kind of under the impression that, oh, I have to keep doing this until I break through the ground, because it seems like, you know, everything is kind of getting more unstable. It seems like eventually I'm going to break through and I'll be totally fine. And eventually I started to get the same conversation loop that just kind of like kept happening. And I shouldn't even say loop. It was just the same line of dialogue, because I'd reached the end of it. And I think it was something along the lines of like telling me that, like, you know, we can keep doing this forever, basically. And I kept on doing that over and over, and I'm like, okay, the ground's not breaking, something is going on here. And so I decided to try out a few different things and then figured out eventually how to finish it. But I think the kind of obtuseness there of not really knowing where to go, and, you know, in the moment you're being chased, right? You just don't want to get caught, because if you get caught, you have to redo the chase part over again. And it's just like, oh man, what am I doing wrong? But I think that is just kind of one of the small things there. In a funny way, the sound design and the actual kind of rumble and whatnot, and kind of parts of the games that you've played previously, were maybe a little bit too good, in the sense that, like, hey, like, I think I'm supposed to do this, but clearly it's not working this time, so I got to try something else. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing there. But I mean, as you can tell, I think just kind of from everything I've talked about so far, very, very happy with how this game turned out overall. It is already available on PC, I believe. I think it's available on Steam for $9.99. So, you know, maybe people have played it on PC already. Maybe people have not played it at all and are looking to pick it up for the first time on consoles. And, you know, I think, after kind of playing through everything, I definitely recommend people go and check out this game. And so it is basically ready and waiting for you to go and pick up on March 12th. Like I said, $7.99, or I think about $8 on the Switch store. But coming to all the major consoles. And very exciting. I'm very pleasantly surprised. Didn't really quite know what to expect in total. But, you know, now that I've kind of reached the end of everything and seen it through, very happy with kind of the overall product, and look forward to kind of seeing what else Lovable Hat Cult comes out with in the future as well. Because I think it's nice to see, you know, indie devs kind of take different directions in gaming and stuff. I think that's kind of one of the reasons I kind of heavily lean towards kind of the indie side. Of course, I play, you know, AAA games and things there too, and I like those at specific times, but these kind of newer experiences where I'm getting something more like fresh, or I'm getting a story that kind of really pulls me in, are kind of the ones that stand out to me the most when I try to like think back on things in kind of like a year that I've played a whole bunch of different games, and which ones kind of really stood out to me. AAA ones I think will always be in my mind as well, but, you know, finding these really juicy indie selections are the meat of everything, and I like that quite a bit. Speaking of that, I've just got one more thing that I did want to go through for, the end of this episode, and that is actually that PlayStation has, I think, one more day left in its PlayStation Indies sale. And there is, I went through earlier, kind of just going through everything, there was a list of about, I think, so going from just ones that I have played and really enjoyed and, you know, hope that people would check out as well. I went through, and there's a list of about like 40 something games on there, and thinking about it, I'm like, no, I don't have the time probably, or like the ability to kind of adequately go through all of these without, you know, making it feel like people are just, or like games are just getting lost in the shuffle and stuff. So I did want to point out about 10 games on there that I think are, you know, really strong indie games that you should definitely check out. Because I think I own all of these games, I can't see what the sale price is at the moment, except for, I think, one of them, Omensight, I know was $9.99, because I picked that up recently, and it was the one that I was watching out for a while, and, you know, because it was on sale, I was able to get it. But just kind of want to let you guys know that these are the 10 games that I would recommend heavily to go and check out before this sale ends. I think it ends on the 10th, which is tomorrow, basically. This posting on March 9th and everything. So if you happen to hear this before it ends, go check it out. See what you can find on there. There's like 100 plus things on the sale itself. Not just games, but I think also like things as far as like DLC for certain games as well. But the top 10 list that I have here, and it's not actually in an actual order of rank or whatnot, but the first one was a game from 2016 called Fury. You guys have heard me talk about that a lot already by the Game Bakers. I think it's one of the strongest games in their catalog. Very, very cool story overall, but also just, you know, really super tight action gameplay and everything there. Surprisingly, the kind of, you know, third-person action worked really well with the kind of bullet hell shoot 'em up style that the game had also. Kind of makes me wonder if I'd probably enjoy Nier Automata, which I probably will, so maybe I should try that out also. But that one isn't for sale. Fury is for sale. They also have, I think, the Fury DLC in there as well. So there's kind of, I think it's called One More Fight, and it's basically kind of a extra boss that you can fight at the end of everything. And I think it gives you a little bit more story, because I think I picked it up a while back. I just haven't tried it out. But along with that, it's just kind of an extra layer of challenge there. The second one that I'd mention is Felseal Arbiter's Mark. This is, I think, one of my favorite games from 2019. It is a kind of more tactical tactical RPG style game. Very cool looking kind of style overall. It's kind of more of a I would almost say it's kind of like comic book-ish kind of style, but the characters in there I think are kind of the strong suit, and you know, tactical gameplay is real tight. I like the kind of class changing system that you can kind of change on the fly and kind of mix and match classes together. I think that's a really cool thing that they have there going for it. We also have Moonlighter, which is a really cool game from 2018, where you basically delve into dungeons during the nighttime, and during the day you sell all of the wares that you find in the dungeons and kind of run this shop in a town that you slowly build up over time. So it's a really cool concept, and I think this is one of the best games that does this type of thing. So check that one out for sure. I already mentioned Omen Sight, that one, very strong game that I platinumed recently. I'll probably actually do a full review at some point as well. Just have to kind of gather some more thoughts on all that, because that was a really fun experience. You're basically solving a murder mystery by kind of reliving the same 24 hours over and over again, and kind of traveling down different timeline areas and things by following different characters. So really cool gameplay mechanics overall there, along with just, you know, pretty decent action combat as well. Children of Morta is another one I'd recommend. That one is a game that you either play solo or with friends, and I think that's kind of one of the strong suits, is that if you play with friends, it's a really cool co-op experience, but the actual, you know, story going on in the background is one of the strong suits of this game as well. The narrator, particularly, very, very good. Eikenfell is actually, or maybe Eikenfell, I forget which one it actually is, but I think I'll say Eikenfell. Eikenfell is a really cool game that I started recently where, you know, it's got really banging music. I'm not super far into it, but it's about you kind of trying to find your sister who is a witch at a kind of academy for witches and wizards. And she's gone missing, apparently, or like she, you know, I think she was supposed to come back for summer break and didn't show up. And so you go to try and find her and figure out what's going on. But, you know, really cool music. Interesting type of like battle system where it's kind of somewhat timing based and a little bit grid based, kind of similar to, I guess, more like the Paper Mario kind of series. But really, really strong game overall as well. There's also Cross Code, which is a game that is kind of a, I guess, like semi top down, semi like between like 2D, 3D action RPG type of thing. Pretty nice music and kind of overall vibe there as well. But I'm not super deep into that one either, but I can tell just kind of from the feel of the game that the combat system in there is really cool. And as I kind of unlock more abilities, I can see that things are going to kind of build on each other. And I'm using some Indie Ronin foresight over here to know that I'm going to really love this game. So I think other people should check it out while it's on sale as well. The last few ones I have for you is Battle Chasers Night War. That one is a really cool, kind of, I guess it's that same kind of thing. There are a lot of games now kind of straddle that like 2D almost 3D kind of look where, you know, there's like 2D backgrounds and stuff and 2D looking characters, or almost 3D looking characters in front. But it's basically an RPG kind of game where you travel with a few companions, and in the beginning you're trying to find your companions because you get split up. But the, I think, strong points of this game is, you know, the storytelling, the writing, and then even the actual, like, combat itself. Even though it's a turn-based type of game, each time a character gets in a attack or kind of uses an ability and whatnot, you kind of actually really feel it in the vibration of the controller. And I think that kind of adds an extra level of immersion, which is really cool to see. I mentioned before, actually, probably on this podcast, the Messenger is on sale right now. And that one is a really cool 2D side-scrolling platforming kind of game with a little bit of action in there as well. And pretty cool kind of, I think it's midway twist that happens that changes the game slightly also. And like I mentioned before, nice sound design there. When you go underwater for the first time, the sound muffles, and it's a really cool kind of immersion experience and whatnot. But yeah, very cool writing, and really actually funny writing for some of the parts as well. If you find the shopkeeper and get to talk to him, like, keep on talking to him, because it's great. He's got lots of cool stories. And then the last one is one that myself and Michael really dig. Michael especially, I think this is one of his favorite games of all time, and that is Hollow Knight. I think on the PSN it's called the Void Heart Edition. So it comes with all the different, like, DLC and packs that have been added on afterwards. But yeah, dude, super, super immersive kind of atmospheric type of game. It's basically you're like a bug in a land of just kind of all like bugs and creepy crawlies and stuff. And you're kind of making your way through to, you know, discover what's going on in this world and kind of figure things out. It's essentially like a Metroidvania kind of action game with a little bit of Souls mechanics, where you kind of collect, I guess, I don't even know what they call them, but you collect these things that are like a soul currency, basically, by defeating enemies, and then over time, you can use what you've acquired. Actually, wait, no, hold on a second. I might be thinking, no, okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of, as you're kind of, you know, going through and stuff, you, when you hit people, you do get this ability to kind of use, like, magic and whatnot. But the main thing that you're collecting is a currency. It kind of looks like little shells, and they sound like coins kind of when you pick them up. But if you die, you lose all of those coins, and you have to go back and find your like your shadow or your shade and then defeat it to be able to get those things back. Otherwise, you lose it all, and you got to start from scratch. And then coins, or the bug shells, can be used to kind of get upgrades and things in stores, as well as like different maps and stuff like that. So it is a currency that's kind of important, but you could probably get through the game without it as well. Just kind of depends on your gameplay style. So that's the full 10 list that I have there for you. So if you want to check out anything over there, definitely give those ones a look. But the best deal by far is not one that I listed in there, because, you know, I think this would be cheating to have this type of thing in a top 10 list. It is called the Instant Indie Collection Volume 4. And it's a game that includes, or it's a collection, I should say, that includes three games. It includes Dear Esther, Hue, and The Flame in the Flood. Now, Michael has been super high on The Flame in the Flood in the past. I know he really enjoys that game. I thought Hue is a really cool puzzle game that kind of plays with colors, and gaining colors is a way to kind of further the puzzle experience and whatnot. And Dear Esther is one that I have in my backlog that I haven't played, but I've heard good things about. And the reason I mentioned it's probably the best deal on this sale by far is that the collection of those three games is, I believe, $149 on the store right now, which is 95% off from, I think, its normal, like, $29.99 price point. So, crazy, crazy deal. I think even, I think those games actually might even be individually available on the sale, but, you know, because I for sure saw The Flame in the Flood on there, but if you see the games individually and you don't have them already, definitely go down and check for, or even just search Instant Indie Collection Volume 4, and that's a huge, huge amount of savings right now for three pretty cool games. So check those things out if you want to. You got one more day. I'm sorry if people aren't listening, like, you know, today, and they may be listening on, like, the weekend or something, but, you know, I think the sale's been up for 2 or 3 weeks at this point, so hopefully you've gotten all the things out of it that you want, and if not, hopefully I can help steer you to a few more things there. But that's going to do it for this episode of Ready and Waiting. Thank you guys for tuning in as always. And thank you all for the support. And, you know, if you enjoyed my review of Journey of the Broken Circle, definitely go check it out when it comes out in a few days and see if you enjoy it too. Feel free to email in any kind of thoughts you guys have on the game to brosandconsoles@gmail.com. If you want to just check out any other games that we've talked about on the indie things as well, you found something that you really enjoyed, feel free to give us an email and we'll kind of talk about that stuff also in the normal episodes that we get back to on, I think, Saturday. But until then, hope you guys are staying safe and healthy. Peace out, and I will see you all in a few more days. Cheers, everybody.